Welcome to The Elusive Truth with Rich and sometimes Larry. Today's show will focus on Tucker Carlson. Have you heard about him? You probably have if you know anything about news. The biggest thing is that he was let go by Fox Network, and he was their number one primetime audience generator. I mean, he had the highest views of any cable-produced news program for the past couple years. A lot has been going on, and I've heard of him, and I like his stuff. He seems to be giving us good news and informative, and he seems to be, or seems to care about the American people and giving us the truth. And a lot of craziness has been happening since his departure. This is going to be a clip of Tucker Carlson's public performance at the Heritage Foundation right before he was let go. Very interesting. I was only going to have a few minutes of this, but I have over 20 minutes of him talking with this speech, and it was one of the best speeches I've heard in a long time. So go down the rabbit hole with me, and let's check out Tucker Carlson. We'll start learning something, more than you probably wanted to know. But here he is, Tucker Carlson at the Heritage Foundation. Have a listen.
Nice. I feel a little underdressed looking out in this crowd of handsome, well-dressed people. I just came from work. And if you wear a tuxedo in the air, they think it's the March of Dimes. So I didn't want to make any, you know, I don't think it was a telethon. So pardon my appearance. It's amazing to be in a room. This is far more people than live in the town that I live in. I haven't been in an elevator in 3 years. That's how remote my life has become. So it's just very cool, or worn socks for that matter. To be in a room full of nice people, and I want to thank you, Father Scalia, wherever you are. That invocation, for some reason, that really got me. Yeah, it did. And it, actually, I'll just tell you, since it's just us and no one's watching, that it reminded me that I don't pray enough for the country, and I should. And I'm upset. But the answer is to include the country in your prayer. So thank you for reminding us of that. Anyway, thank you. I just want to start by saying that I'm grateful to be here, and I want to tell you why I am here. There are two specific reasons. The first and most immediate is that during this fall's midterm elections, I got almost every single call wrong. I typically don't weigh in on races because, you know, what do I know? I don't actually cover politics. I'm not that interested. But this time I got so spun up and so emotional that I convinced myself there was this wave coming, this political liberation that was going to happen. And I told our viewers that in some great detail and introduced a series of candidates who subsequently lost as, you know, the new governor of New York or fill in the blank. And it was so humiliating to be that wrong in public, often wrong, not usually in front of other people, that I thought I've just got to take some time off and think about why I was so unbelievably wrong. So I went pheasant hunting, not that it was the pheasant's fault, but that is kind of a way to clear your head. And I wound up, because bird hunting really is, again, not good for the birds, but very good for you. And I wound up in South Dakota with Kevin, among other people, including a couple of my college roommates. And I was just, I was so impressed by him as a person. And really, having spent my life in Washington, I can tell you, if you're not from here, the key question about anybody who runs any institution in Washington is, how false is this person? God sends messages. We can't immediately translate all of them. So I can't tell you what that meant. There clearly is meaning. The point is, the man who runs Heritage is not false at all. In fact, my assessment of him was he's completely real. He's an honest person. He means it. He's not playing a role. And that was so thrilling to me to see that. And by the way, it was confirmed by one of Heritage's security people who was standing backstage with me. And I asked him, because the security guys always know they're all former cops. You know, they've seen everything. They have seen humanity in various states of drunken undress. Like, you can't shock them. And they know who's real and who's not. And I asked, you know, what do you think? And one of them said to me, to my face, I would go to war for him. And I thought, And these are the kind of people who will tell you the truth. I mean, like, why would he lie to me? I don't even know his name, but he meant it. And so to see a leader, a real leader at the helm of an institution that matters, that has the kind of throw weight that Heritage does, was thrilling, was absolutely thrilling for me. Because the story of the last decade is the collapse of leadership, not of the population. The people remain noble and decent, so far as I can tell. I still live here. I'm never leaving. We have good people. We have terrible people in charge. And not just of our government, but of the institutions that I grew up in, the Episcopal Church, my high school. You know, I could just go on and on and on. They're all run by weak people. And, you know, it's the same in marriage. You know, weak husband causes angry wife. Weak leaders cause an angry country. That's true. And to see someone who's not a weak leader at the helm of Heritage just thrilled me. So I wanted to come for that reason, just being totally blunt with you. And the second reason is to pay homage and to give some measure of thanks to Ed Fulner for giving me my first job, which changed my life. And I was, to say I was not a promising hire would be an understatement. That's not false modesty. In fact, if anything, I'm underplaying it. But I was leaving college without a degree or a job and attempting to marry my girlfriend, which I subsequently did, and ran into this giant roadblock in the form of her Episcopal priest father who said, no, you know, job first. And not only did I not have a job, I had like no idea what I wanted to do. And so I applied to a couple of different places, the CIA, if you can even imagine, some boarding school in Rabat, because I thought, you know, Morocco, lower standards, maybe they'll hire me, no. And I wound up at Heritage, as you heard, as a fact checker, copy editor at Policy Review, the quarterly magazine of the Heritage Foundation. And that job absolutely changed my life. I was paid $14,000 a year plus a $100 bill for Christmas, which Dr. Fulner gave out personally to the entire staff, at least half of whom went downstairs and bought liquor with it at the liquor store, which I think is now part of the intern housing. But it was a long time ago. It was so long ago I smoked in my office. That's how long ago it was. That's like riding a mule to work, just to put it in the context of American history. Smoke in your office? Yeah, I did. In fact, Matt Spaulding told me to stop one day, and I thought, wow. This modernization program is moving too fast for me. I can't deal with it. I've always been conservative in the truest sense. But Matt, you were right, and I quit. And anyway. But yes, it was a long time ago. And in the course of that job, though I didn't get rich, to be honest with you, I did learn what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, which was become a journalist. And that was really under the guidance of a man called Adam Meyerson, who ran it, who was... that was 32 years ago, and to this day, he really is the kindest person I've ever worked for. Just kind and patient and exactly, he thought I was completely nuts. He thought I was a lunatic, and I could tell he thought that, but he was patient with me through my entire year and a half there, helped me get my next job at a newspaper in Arkansas, because no one else would hire me, but he set me up with this job. He walked into my cubicle and said, "Do you want to move to Arkansas?" And so I called my bride, who was a religion teacher at the local Episcopal school, and I said, "Do you want to move to Arkansas?" And what a wonderful woman she's turned out to be. And she said, "Of course. Is that near Colorado?" Quote, quote. Very, but she was willing to go there. Very much a Northeasterner at heart. But and we did, and we loved it. But I got there because Adam Meyerson felt that it was his job to help me get my next job, because his job was to train up reasonable people and put them in journalism, even if it meant sending them to Arkansas. And I was thinking about Heritage this morning in the shower, not a place I think about it, but I did today. And what makes it great, and one of the best things about Heritage over time, longitudinally, 50 years say, is that Heritage has always hired a lot of people. And that is an underrated thing. It really is. Giving people a job, even if it's 14 grand a year plus a $100 bill for liquor, you change someone's life. You put them on a trajectory. At least that's true for me. I mean, I had not succeeded in school, to put it mildly. And I did not feel, I always felt like I was smart. Not one other person felt that way. Until I got to Heritage. I'm not sure they were super impressed, but they treated me like an adult. Because they had high intellectual standards. There were standards of honesty. And, you know, the idea at Heritage when I worked there wasn't just that, you know, we're fighting this war against the other side, of course. But it did not logically follow from that at Heritage that you could say whatever you wanted. Just because the other side was rotten didn't mean you could be rotten. They really hewed to the highest standards of factual accuracy, intellectual honesty. They really meant it. They did. And even if you didn't agree with them, they were very serious about it. They were intellectually serious people, every single person I worked with. The receptionist in the office at Policy Review was going to school at night to learn Russian. And then the week I started at Policy Review, the Soviet Union collapsed, which was an amazing thing. The coup against Gorbachev in the third week of August, 1991, was the week I started at Heritage. And in retrospect, of course, you never appreciate the significance of things as they happen to you. You can't really know what the movie's about until it ends. But at the time, we didn't really appreciate how, well, two things. One, our entire political orientation was based on this war between the United States and the Soviet Union, this Cold War, but very much a war. And every part of our politics, as you well remember, those of you my age and older, remember, every part of our politics revolved around that central conflict. We were in conflict with a country that was both anti-markets and anti-Christian. And that put in stark relief our own beliefs. And what would happen when that ended, when there wasn't that clear contrast? That's the first thing. And of course, the second thing is we could never have known the third week of August 1991, as we saw totalitarianism die, that it would ever come here. We just couldn't imagine that. You know, we believe that victories were permanent. They're not, of course. That's the first lesson of history. You know, nothing is permanent except our own demise and God. But we didn't kind of get that. You know, if you told me then that this week the Department of Justice would have indicted a group of people, people I don't agree with, by the way, on a lot of different issues, black nationalist socialists from Florida, okay, kind of not my demographic, but would have indicted them for criticizing the U.S. position, the Biden administration's position on the war in Ukraine, and charged them with felonies for which they're each facing 10 years in prison. If you told me that could happen here, I would have laughed at you. No, we have a First Amendment. Like, that can't happen here, but it has. That and a lot of other things, which are gravely unsettling, actually, and people who were rooted in the Cold War story and the reality of the Cold War, again, my age, 53, kind of know where that goes. So the purpose of my talk, which I, by the way, I will keep brief. I'm an inveterate talker. I can literally talk forever. You can't even imagine my capacity for loquaciousness. I mean, it has no end. It's a bottomless well. You know, if you dropped a quarter off the observation deck of the Empire State Building, how long would it take to hit the sidewalk? That was always what we talked about when we were kids. You would never hear it. In my case, I can literally go on first. So I will stop, and Kevin and I are going to have a conversation, so they can be much more edifying. But I would just say two things about the present moment, because I think about them all the time. And I brood on this constantly. And then I take every afternoon, because fundamentally I'm Swedish, I take a sauna every day. As a rest, I do, I'm not kidding, every single day. Never miss it. And my whole family does. It's like our one cultural contribution. Oh, we're Swedish. Ooh, it's a very deep ethnicity. Oh, yes. A lot of Swedish traditions. You should hear our comedy. It's hilarious. But the one thing I do is take a sauna to kind of get out of my head and get away from all this stuff. And I never can. And I just use my time in the sauna to brood more. But here are two conclusions I've come to, which I think are slightly less depressing than the most obvious, which is the country's really going at high speed in the wrong direction. Yeah, no kidding. Like in ways that are just unfathomable. And for people my father's age, for example, who's 82 and such a decent man, and I could go on forever about my dad, who I saw this morning, you know, was born in an orphanage called the Home for Little Wanderers in Boston and became a success and the head of a federal agency and served in the Marine Corps and sort of lived the America that you imagine is possible for people who are smart and try hard and all that. For people of that age, it's too much, actually. The change is too abrupt. They can't metabolize it, really. It's too horrifying. But for those of us who are still engaged in trying to figure out what this means and not just repelled by it, I would say two things that are, I think, worth thinking about. The first is you look around and you see so many people break under the strain, under the downward pressure of whatever this is that we're going through. And you look with disdain and sadness as you see people you know become Quislings. You see them revealed as cowards. You see them going along with a new thing, which is clearly a poisonous thing, a silly thing. You know, saying things you know they don't believe because they want to keep their jobs. If there's a single person in this room who hasn't seen that through George Floyd and COVID and the Ukraine war, raise your hand. Oh, nobody? Right. You all know what I'm talking about. And you're so disappointed in people. You know, you are. And you realize that the herd instinct is maybe the strongest instinct. I mean, it may be stronger than the hunger and sex instincts, actually. The instinct, which again is inherent to be like everybody else and not to be cast out of the group, not to be shunned, that's a very strong impulse in all of us from birth. And it takes over, unfortunately, in moments like this, and it's harnessed, in fact, by bad people in moments like this to produce uniformity. And you see people going along with this and you lose respect for them. And that certainly happened to me at scale over the past 3 years. I'm not mad at people, I'm just sad, I'm disappointed. How could you go along with this? You know it's not true, but you're saying it anyway? Really, you're putting your pronouns in your email? You're ridiculous. You know, but no one else thinks it's ridiculous. Oh no, it's your pronouns in the email. What does that even mean? What does that even mean? You're saying things you can't define. LGBTQIA+? Who's the plus? The plus is invited to my show anytime. Find a plus and I'll interview him. What's it like to be a plus? Am I a plus? I'm serious. I feel like I'm an addition. Does that make me a plus? No one even knows what it is. And the whole society, LGBTQIA+. All right, what's the plus? Oh, shut up, racist. Okay. So you reach that place and you feel, and this is one of the reasons, Father Scalia, I was actually overcome a little bit with emotion as you prayed, because I realized that I was so upset by the behavior of some people I love, frankly, in a country I revere and always have. That I wasn't praying for the country. You know, that's on me, and we all should be. But back to my point. So you see the sadness happening. But there is, as there always is, this is a fact of nature and theology and of observable reality, there is a countervailing force at work always. There's a counterbalance to the badness. It's called goodness. And you see it in people. So for every 10 people who are putting he and him in their electronic JP Morgan email signatures, there's one person who's like, no, I'm not doing that. Sorry, I don't want to fight, but like, I'm not doing that. It's a betrayal of what I think is true. It's a betrayal of my conscience, of my faith, of my sense of myself, of my dignity as a human being, of my autonomy. I am not a slave. I am a free citizen, and I'm not doing that. And there's nothing you can do to me to make me do it. And I hope it won't come to that. But if it does come to that, here I am. Here I am. It's Paul on trial. Here I am. And you see that in people, and it's a completely unexpected assortment of people. I'm really interested in cause and effect, and as I noted at the outset of my remarks and my ability to predict the future, working on that. But because I'm sort of paid to predict things, I try and think a lot about, you know, what connects certain outcomes that I should have seen before they occurred. And in this case, there is no thread that I can find that connects all of the people who've popped up in my life to be that lone, brave person in the crowd who says, no, thank you. You could not have known who these people are. They don't fit a common profile. Some are people like me. Some of them don't look like me at all. Some of them are people I despised on political grounds just a few years ago. I could name their names, but you may not even know about their transformations, and I don't want to wreck your dinner by telling you who they are. But there is, in one case, someone who I made fun of on television, and certainly in my private life in vulgar ways, who was really the embodiment of everything I found repulsive, who in the middle of COVID decided, no, I'm not going along with this. And once you say one true thing and stick with it, all kinds of other true things occur to you. The truth is contagious. Lying is, but the truth is as well. And the second you decide to tell the truth about something, you are filled with this, I don't want to get supernatural on you, but you are filled with this power from somewhere else. Try it. Tell the truth about something. You feel it every day. The more you tell the truth, the stronger you become. That's completely real. It's measurable in the way that you feel. And of course, the opposite is also true. The more you lie, the weaker and more terrified you become. We all know that feeling. You lie about something and all of a sudden you're a prisoner of that lie. You are diminished by it. You are weak and afraid. Drug and alcohol use is the same way. It makes you weak and afraid. But you look around and you see these people, and some of them really have paid a heavy price for telling the truth. And they are cast out of their groups, whatever those groups are, but they do it anyway. And I look on at those people with the deepest possible admiration. I am paid to do that. I face no penalty. Someone came up to me like, "You're so brave." Really? I'm a talk show host. It's like I can have any opinion I want. That's my job. That's why they pay me. It's not brave to tell the truth on a cable news show. And if you're not doing that, you're really an idiot. You're really craven. You're lying on television. Why would you do that? You're literally making a living to say what you think, and you can't even do that? Please. But how about if you're a senior vice president at Citibank? I'm serious. At Citibank. And you're making, you know, $4 million a year. And you've got 3 kids in Bedford, and 2 are in boarding school, and 1 starting at Wesleyan next year. And, like, you need this job, honestly. And your whole sector is kind of collapsing, and you know that. There is no incentive whatsoever for you to tell the truth about anything. You just go into the little re-education meetings, and you're like, "Yeah, diversity is our strength. That's exactly right. We need equity in the capital markets." Okay. All right. So if you're the one guy who refuses to say that, you are a hero, in my opinion. And I know some of them. In fact, my job is to interview them. And I sit back and I look at these people and I give them more credit than I do people who display physical courage, which is often impulsive, by the way. And I'm not denigrating physical courage, which I deeply admire. But you interview people who do amazing things, you know, who rush into the proverbial burning building. And like every man is kind of trained from birth to fantasize about what he would do when the building catches fire and you hear a baby crying. And so you run inside. No one is trained to stand up in the middle of a DEI meeting at Citibank and say, "This is nonsense." And the people who do that, oh, they have my deepest admiration. And so their example really gives me hope. It thrills me. I talk to them all day long, people like that. That's the first thing. We should, in this sad moment of profound and widespread destruction of the institutions that people who share our views built, by the way, earlier generations that would agree substantially with every person in this room, they built those and now they're being destroyed. And oh, that's so depressing. But we can also see rising in the distance new things, new institutions led by new people who are every bit as brave as the people who came before us. Amen. Here's the second thing I'd like to say before I get to the conversation with Dr. Roberts, which is that it might be time to start to reassess the terms we use to describe what we're watching. So when I started at Heritage, the presumption was, and this is a very Anglo-American assumption, that the debates we're having are kind of rational debates about the way to get to mutually agreed upon outcomes, right? So like we all want the country to be more prosperous and free and people to be less oppressed or whatever. And so we're going to argue about tax rates. And I think higher tax gets us there. I'm a Keynesian and you disagree, you're an Austrian or whatever. But the objective is the same. And so we write our papers and they write their papers and may the best papers win. I don't think that's what we're watching now at all. I don't think we're watching a debate over how to get to the best outcome. I think that's completely wrong. And I've come to this conclusion, not, and I should say at the outset, I'm an Episcopalian, so don't take any theological advice from me because I don't have any. I grew up in the shallowest faith tradition that's ever been invented. It's not even a Christian religion at this point. I say with shame. But I'm just saying this as an observer of what's going on. There is no way to assess, say, the transgenderist movement with that mindset. Policy papers don't account for it at all. If you have people who are saying, "I have an idea, let's castrate the next generation. Let's sexually mutilate children." I'm sorry, that's not a political debate. What? It has nothing to do with politics. What's the outcome we're desiring here? An androgynous population? Is that really what are we arguing for that? I don't think anyone could like defend that as a positive outcome. But the weight of the government and you know a lot of corporate interests are behind that. Well, what is that? Well, it's irrational. If you say, "Well, you know, I think abortion is always bad. Well, I think sometimes it's necessary." That's a debate I'm familiar with. But if you're telling me that abortion is a positive good, what are you saying? Well, you're arguing for child sacrifice, obviously. It's not about like, oh, a teen girl gets pregnant and what do we do about that? And victims of rape, I get it. Of course, I understand that, and I have compassion for everyone involved. But when the Treasury Secretary stands up and says, you know what you can do to help the economy? Get an abortion. Well, that's like an Aztec principle, actually. There's not a society in history that didn't practice human sacrifice. Not one. I checked. Even the Scandinavians, I'm ashamed to say. It wasn't just the Mesoamericans. It was everybody. So, like, that's what that is. What's the point of child sacrifice? Well, there's no policy goal entwined with that. No, that's a theological phenomenon. And that's kind of the point I'm making. None of this makes sense in conventional political terms. When people or crowds of people, or the largest crowd of people at all, which is the federal government, the largest human organization in human history, decide that the goal is to destroy things, destruction for its own sake. Hey, let's tear it down. What you're watching is not a political movement, it's evil. So if you want to assess, and I'll put it in non, and I'll stop with this, I'll put it in non, I'll put it in non-political, or non, rather non-specific theological terms, and just say, if you want to know what's evil and what's good, what are the characteristics of those? And by the way, you know, I think the Athenians would have agreed with this. This is not necessarily just a Christian notion. This is kind of a, I would say, widely agreed upon understanding of good and evil. What are its products? What do these two conditions produce? Well, I mean, good is characterized by order, calmness, tranquility, peace, whatever you want to call it, lack of conflict, cleanliness. Cleanliness is next to godliness. It's true. It is. And evil is characterized by their opposites. Violence, hate, disorder, division, disorganization, and filth. So if you are all in on the things that produce the latter basket of outcomes, what you're really advocating for is evil. That's just true. I'm not calling for religious war. Far from it. I'm merely calling for an acknowledgement of what we're watching, which is not what, and I'm not certainly not backing the Republican Party. I mean, ugh. I'm not making a partisan point at all. I'm just noting what's super obvious. Like, those of us who are in our mid-50s are caught in the past in the way that we think about this. One side's like, no, you know, I've got this idea, and we've got this idea, and let's have a debate about our ideas. They don't want a debate. Those ideas won't produce outcomes that any rational person would want under any circumstances. Those are manifestations of some larger force acting upon us. It's just so obvious. It's completely obvious. And I think two things. One, we should say that and stop engaging in these totally fraudulent debates where we are using the terms that we used in 1991 when I started at Heritage, as if maybe, you know, I could just win the debate if I marshaled more facts. I've tried that, doesn't work. And two, maybe we should all take just like 10 minutes a day to say a prayer about it. I'm serious. Like, why not? And I'm saying that to you, not as some kind of evangelist. I'm literally saying that to you as an Episcopalian, the Samaritans of our time. I'm coming to you from the most humble and lowly theological position you can. I'm literally an Episcopalian, okay? And even I have concluded it might be worth taking just 10 minutes out of your busy schedule to say a prayer for the future, and I hope you will.
Good job.
Thank you.
What a speech. I am absolutely amazed what came out of Tucker Carlson's mouth. I had no idea that he was that deep and willing to show his true self. I mean, really, speak the truth, you feel powerful. Speak lies, you're a coward. You do evil stuff. You are always looking over your shoulder. Just basic, generic information that a lot of people, I believe, have lost in this day and age. I'm still, again, I believe that you need to listen to this again. He hits on so many different levels. It's just amazing. So I'm now going to play The next part, it's only a few minutes of him with Kevin Roberts. He asked one question. He was going to ask many more questions, but apparently Tucker took too much time with his rambling, so to speak, which, again, it is absolutely amazing. You really need to listen, and it makes sense. It's common sense, and where did the decency go in the United States? And it all rests with the crazy Democratic government that is now ruling us. So with that, here is Kevin Roberts finishing up his speech here and his time at the Heritage Foundation. But I thought it was interesting. It was a good question. And again, Tucker answered wonderfully, and it makes you think. So here he is, Tucker Carlson with Kevin Roberts at the end of his speech at the Heritage Foundation.
Oh man, the chance to interview Tucker Carlson. Do I have some questions? But because you made your first point seven times, we only have a few minutes.
Well, that's kind of a signature move for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Must be the elitist in you.
Well, there's a lot of that still.
We've got time for two questions.
Great.
But all seriousness, Tucker, thank you. What a great message.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yep.
It was heartfelt.
Things go south at Fox News. There's always a job for you at Heritage.
Well, you've saved me before. So thank you.
We do that for a lot of people very happily. We're not called America's Outpost for nothing. Yeah, think about that. First question, all kidding and sarcasm aside. What do you think over the last 10 or 20 years, whatever timeline you think is appropriate, has changed the most? That is, and I mean that socially and culturally. I don't mean that politically, although you can go there if you want, that has affected everyday Americans' lives?
The lack of information. Mm. This is so name-droppy, but I can't resist. Because
it's the elitist in you.
No, I know. It must be. No, I was actually interviewed Elon Musk this week. And he
there
said,
you go.
So, I know. I was talking to Elon Musk, Elon and I, smoking a cigar on his G4, and he turns to me and he says, you know, Tuck, he calls me Tuck. No, I interviewed him for work. Obviously, and he had such a wonderful line, and he said, the most likely outcome is the most ironic outcome. And I thought, boy, is that's actually I would argue that's a Christian precept, actually. You know, it's kind of the Beatitudes, you know, the first shall be last. And the opposite of what you think is going to happen happens. And so often, and so the internet, the core promise of the internet was as much information as we've ever had at your fingertips, and the result has been a centralization of information. This is deliberate, needless to say, but unnoticed by most people, that results in more controlled information than we could even have imagined 20 years ago. So a lot of information just is not available. I mean, because it's digital and it's controlled by a small number of companies, the polling suggests that a lot of Americans, and I don't mean like hundreds, I mean hundreds of millions of Americans, have no idea what's going on. They don't know the facts about certain things. That it's not just because they're dumb or they're distracted on their iPhones. The whole point of the iPhone was to inform you, and the net effect has been to make people completely ignorant of the core, of the actual facts, like the non-disputed facts about a lot of different things. And you saw this certainly during COVID. So that challenges the idea of democracy, which, you know, rests on the notion of an informed voting public, of a citizenry. And we don't have that. And that really, I never would have expected that at all. And the last thing I'll say is don't throw away your hard copy books, because they are the repository, the enduring repository that cannot be, and I'm dead serious, and I don't mean to, I'm not going to tell you to buy gold and ammo, though obviously you should think about it. But definitely don't throw away your books, because they can't be disappeared, because they exist physically. And I would say a corollary to that is don't throw away your relationships with other people, because they can't be disappeared either. The material, the physical, things that you can smell, those are the things that you can trust. Your spouse, your dogs, your children, especially your dogs, but you know, your actual friendships, your college roommates, people in person. As the world becomes more digitized and people live in this kind of, this realm that's disconnected from physical reality, I think the only way to stay sane is to cling more tightly to the things that you can smell. And I've really gotten to the point where if I can't smell it, I'm not dealing with it. And I mean that. And that includes books. Anyway, that's what's changed.
Books, relationships, and ammo. Tucker Carlson's Guide to the Universe.
Yes.
That is awesome. Well, we've got 46 seconds.
Okay.
This one. And it's tight because we have two real treats. Even after you.
I talk too much, and my apologies.
No, don't apologize. All great. I knew you were going to talk more than you said you would.
Every time, ask my wife.
And now we're down to 28 seconds. So when everyone wakes up tomorrow, whether they're staying here or they're able to go home, what should be top of mind for them to do in their local community?
Oh, well, the very first thing you should do every single day is tell all the people you love that you love them for two reasons. Because you do, and affirming things out loud makes them real. Words are the most important and most powerful thing that we have. And of course, I have an interest in saying that. If I sold Chryslers, I'd be like, cars are the most important thing. But words are, in the beginning was the word, and so articulate it. And that is also simultaneously an acknowledgement of a truth that we don't face, which is we don't know what's going to happen today. And we could die. That's the one thing that unites every person, is the certainty of death. And reminding yourself of that every single day will bring you, paradoxically, joy. I love you. That's the most important thing.
What a wonderful response. In a lot of ways, that's a fitting way, not for just you and me to conclude our brief conversation.
Sorry.
You're never going to live that one.
Yeah, well.
But in a lot of ways, also a good way for us to conclude this gathering before some additional entertainment. And so I will ask all of you to join me in thanking Tucker Carlson for being here tonight and for what you do.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you.
Do not throw away your hard copy books. Don't throw away your relationships with other people, and tell everyone that you love them. What's more fitting than that? What a humble man. What a good man. What a good speech. And it makes you really start thinking what's going on in this world. And to kind of help that out, I have Russell Brand. He's got his little bit on why Tucker Carlson was fired from Fox Network, because basically after this speech, within 24 hours, he was let go. And then the rumors and then all the other craziness started coming out. Basically, I heard one thing that he was releasing racist emails to his producers, which everything got blown out of proportion. Even Larry came up and told me that Tucker Carlson was part of the Pizzagate. That's something that he heard, which he since then has retracted. And, you know, basically, you know, what his speech was, that's hard to even believe he is a bad man. You never know with people these days, but I'll put my eggs in his basket because he seems like a genuinely good person, and we need more of that in today's society. But with that, I'm going to have Russell Brand explain why he thinks Tucker Carlson got fired and the implications and the reasoning why the truth is so, I guess, being outlawed in a sense. You know, the people that rule us don't like us knowing everything and having knowledge, and they want to separate us. And they want us to keep us fighting, and they want to keep us poor. But that's me just rambling on. So I'll let somebody else ramble on, and let me know what you think. But this is Russell Brand on Tucker Carlson, reasons why he was fired from Fox News Network.
Tucker Carlson has left Fox News and the mainstream media are celebrating, but should they check themselves before they wreck themselves, because Tucker's departure could be the beginning of the end for the mainstream. Hello there, you 6.4 million awakening wonders. Thanks for joining me on this voyage to truth and freedom on this great day where the mainstream media took a heavy blow. Tucker Carlson has left Fox News, and I see this as a great harbinger, the beginning of the end for the mainstream. A mainstream media that's been reduced to packaging and selling your data. They do it more than even porn sites. Check those facts for yourself. A mainstream media that siphons us off into silos, turns us against one another, plays to the gallery, preaches to the converted, has got nothing original to say, and serves the government rather than the public they were set up to inform. Remember, turn on the notification bell and subscribe right now so that we can continue to bring you great independent content every single day of the goddamn week, 365 days a year, even if it kills us, goddammit. Let's get into the story and see how the mainstream are reporting on Tucker's departure.
Right now, the media landscape is significantly different than it was just 2 hours ago, with two of the highest profile cable hosts out of a job.
Oh yeah, and Don Lemon left CNN as well.
First, the news that Tucker Carlson, who was regularly drawing 3 million viewers a night, parted ways with Fox News. And then, just an hour later, Don Lemon tweeting he is out at CNN after 17 years with that network.
It also shows that the media is obsessed with itself. It's in a sort of narcissistic spiral, reporting on its own perspectives, its own heroes and its own villains. What is the mainstream media supposed to be for? Just for a moment, remind yourself that it's actually about giving you information about important stuff, like how the government are governing, about how corporations are behaving, the information that you need to live your life efficiently and effectively so you're informed politically. It doesn't do that. You know it doesn't do that. You know that the mainstream media is owned by certain corporate interests. You know that it gets all of its revenue from like the pharmaceutical industry. You know that they're tied up with the military industrial complex. And you know that they support the state with only partisan distinctions between this party or that party defining their output. They do not serve in your awakening. They do not serve your empowerment. Where Tucker Carlson goes next will inform us a great deal about our political landscape. If he joins an independent news organization, that's going to be fascinating. It will demonstrate where the power is moving, and it will show us why authoritarian, centralized systems of power are doubling down on trying to censor, control, surveil, prohibit, smear, destroy any alternative voices, because they recognize that now we can all communicate instantaneously and challenge any narratives that they put forward. That's why they've become ultra-propagandist.
The audience tops 3 million on an average night. Viewers drawn to Carlson's far-right opinions on issues from January 6th to immigration.
Far-right, da-da-da. So you can see the opponents of Fox News and the detractors of Tucker use this as an opportunity to talk about the Dominion voting machines, the payouts, and Tucker Carlson being far-right. Even if you are a Democrat, even if you are a socialist, to describe Tucker Carlson as far-right is the only thing that's extreme that's going on there.
Carlson leaves just days after Fox Corporation settled a defamation lawsuit with Dominion Voting System for $787.5 million.
Much of the reporting of Tucker Carlson's departure has centered on Fox News' recent out-of-court settlement to Dominion, which, of course, is meant to verify Biden's authenticity and legitimacy as a president, and democracy more broadly is successful and functioning. Even if it's legally proven that those Dominion voting machines are effective, democracy itself is obviously broken. And here's just one example of how. Looking at other out-of-court settlements, for example, the pharmaceutical industry regularly settles out-of-court for much larger sums. And the pharmaceutical industry is the biggest funder of the mainstream media through advertising and commercials. In 2009, the largest healthcare fraud settlement in history, pharmaceutical giant Pfizer, paid $2.3 billion to resolve criminal and civil allegations that the company illegally promoted uses of four of its drugs. So if you were a really ethical organization, you wouldn't go to bat for the pharmaceutical industry while attacking Fox News. Oh, they've paid $787 million. It's the biggest fine in history. What about Pfizer's billions settled out of court? You were happy to promote their product. How often do you see on mainstream media, sponsored by Pfizer?
CNN Tonight. brought to you by Pfizer.
They cannot badmouth Pfizer. So them claiming to be ethical organizations is ridiculous. It's a minor difference that they are fetishizing and valorizing because they've got nothing real to offer you. They know they've got nothing real to offer you. In 2020, the pharmaceutical industry spent $4.5 billion on advertising on national TV in the United States. In 2020, TV ad spending of the pharma industry accounted for 75% of the total ad spend. Okay, so we know that CNN and MSNBC and Fox News are all in bed with the pharmaceutical industry. What's their relationship like with that other titan of US and globalist power, the military-industrial complex? Many of the retired military leaders employed by the networks as paid contributors have secondary affiliations that are rarely, if ever, mentioned, leaving viewers in the dark about whose interests they're promoting. That's why people like Tucker Carlson, because Tucker Carlson attacks the military-industrial complex. Tucker Carlson says, I was wrong to promote the Iraq war. I'm ashamed of it. He sounds like a normal guy. You might not agree with him. You might think he's racist. You might think he's the worst person in the world. Or you might love him. But what the mainstream media, what these authoritarian systems are not acknowledging is we are being stripped of humanity. We're being stripped of real discourse, real connection, real conversation. So people that seem real, they have an impact. And they're going to have an impact because they're operating in a landscape of total corruption where they're posing as pious. On what basis? They take money from the military-industrial complex. They take money from the pharmaceutical industry. They steal your data. They lie to you. And they want you to treat them like they're kind of priests or preachers or people with some kind of moral rectitude. They have none. None of the leading networks, including CNN, Fox, and MSNBC, makes a regular practice of announcing its military analysts' financial ties to the Pentagon, connections that could color their on-air comments. MSNBC is owned by Comcast, a subsidiary of General Electric, the 14th largest defense contractor in the US. One wonders if General Electric are out in Taiwan right now, agitating for new contracts when Taiwan and China situation gets a little bit more aggressive. So how can they report honestly and openly? They have deep relationships with corporate and state interests that prevent them from reporting to you openly and honestly. And now, data capture, a significant part of the mainstream media's economic model, is stealing your data, packaging it up, and selling it. So how can they ever report openly on privacy? News outlets entrusted with promoting transparency and privacy are also lobbying behind closed doors against proposals to regulate the mass collection of Americans' data. The Interactive Advertising Bureau, a trade group, reported it was lobbying against a push at the Federal Trade Commission to restrict the collection and sale of personal data for the purpose of delivering advertisements. The IAB represents both data brokers and online media outlets that depend on digital advertising, such as CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, and dozens of other media companies. So all of them operate within one cohesive unit, capturing your data and selling it to advertisers. It's necessary for them to do that. So they can never do a story, this just in, people are bundling up your data and selling it, even worse than pornography sites do. And it is me. The lobbying reveals a tension that is rarely a center of the discourse around online privacy. Major media corporations increasingly rely on a vast ecosystem of privacy violations, even as the public relies on them to report on it. In 2020, a study found that news websites contained the most trackers globally, more than business, banking, entertainment, or adult websites. They're worse than porn. While users may turn to the news to learn of ways in which corporations compromise their privacy, it is news sites where we find the greatest risk to privacy, noted the report. That is a literal definition of irony. You might go to a mainstream media news website to learn about privacy. They'll steal your data and sell it while you're doing it. What the Tucker Carlson story points to more broadly is the decay of trust in the mainstream media. Tucker is a powerful voice because people trust him. You might not like him. You might like Don Lemon, who's also left. You might like Jon Stewart, who I think is amazing, who asks difficult questions of people in power. That isn't what I'm saying. You've got the right to like whoever you want to like. What we're discussing is the economic models and how these economic models have been impacted by the technological revolution and how it has impeded their ability to tell you the truth and how it's now impossible for the mainstream media to do anything other than advocate for the state and work for corporate interests. Let's explain why using this fantastic article by Leighton Woodhouse. The era of mass media, during which just a dozen or so giant print and broadcast corporations enjoyed hegemonic control over the national public discourse, lasted about 80 years, beginning roughly a century ago, when modern television was born. That era ended 2 decades ago when social media networks emerged. With the cheap, targeted advertising their technology enabled, the new tech platforms destroyed the business model of the mass media. Unable to compete for advertisers, the media mammoths of the 20th century floundered. The entire industry was thrown into a crisis, bleeding revenue and laying off staff. It's economics that's at the heart of this. That is why they are amplifying their message either on the left or the right. Not because they care about the issues. Of course they don't care about the issues any more than Budweiser care about trans issues or blue-collar union issues. They care about selling their product, providing a platform for advertisers. They can't do that effectively anymore because a better model, i.e. this one, currently exists. At the same time, social media began sorting news consumers into hyper-polarized digital silos, shattering the broad political center that the traditional media catered to and relied upon to sell advertisements to a mass audience. The New York Times, CNN, and even Fox News saw their broad national readerships and viewerships contract into smaller and ever more partisan echo chambers, even as ordinary people began to forge horizontal connections with one another online, exchanging information laterally. We have networked communication now. You tell us stuff all the time that we report on. One example being when that Facebook whistleblower came out and we went, oh, that's good. She's standing up to Facebook. All of our comments under the video was like, hold on a minute. They're going to use this information to censor people's communication on Facebook, not to impose regulation on Facebook itself. You were right. We now know that. Our business model and our media model is better because we're listening to you all of the time. We know that our collective intelligence is vast and greater. We know that we're limited. We know that I have personal biases, personal experiences that mean I can't sometimes see the wood for the trees, but we remain engaged with you so that we can evolve a better inclusive narrative that's beyond the political models that are dying, that this article describes as now irrelevant. We are using a model of the center versus the periphery, not the left versus the right. We're going to have to get over that because that's what they're using to keep us separated and divided because that's all they've got now. The public began generating their own autonomous narratives about world events, typically cobbled together eclectically from reports by various news outlets, but beholden to none of them in particular. That's literally what we do here. We look at mainstream media outlets, we find narratives that we believe are helpful to you, we use the information you give us, and we have a conversation about it. It's a better model. We're not beholden to advertisers in the same way. You know, we have sponsorship, we require sponsorship. There are people here working. Who do you think's operating this camera? Who do you think's putting all this content together? But what we have is an authentic connection with you. We have the ability to apologize, to respond in real time. The power to shape the national narrative devolved downward, becoming increasingly fractured in the process. That's exactly what should happen. Power should be with you. We should be responding to you. You shouldn't have organizations telling you what to think, a government involved in your life intimately, corporations ignoring your requirements to amass huge profits. You have the power. That's how this should be developing. Martin Gurry, in his book, The Revolt of the Public, describes that now the possibility and necessity for more democracy exists. We have to accept that people live in different communities with different values, ideals, and principles. And instead of continually turning against one another, we could devolve democracy. Okay, you want to run your community like this, do you? Oh, you're Muslim. Oh, you're trans. Oh, you're Christian. You're working class. You've got to be able to run your own communities. Instead of turning people against one another in continual fear, you have to allow them to democratically govern their own communities. Or, alternatively, what you could do is centralize authority, censor dissent, smear your opponent, and shut down all opposition. That's what they're trying to do. This anarchic new media ecosystem has defined the public discourse ever since. For both elected politicians and the administrative state, it has constituted a perennial crisis. Bureaucracies manage populations by striking bargains with leaders. You can't negotiate with a mob, much less 1,000 of them. From the perspective of the state, this new information landscape was essentially ungovernable. An entire regime of social control helmed by the most powerful politicians in the country in partnership with the titans of the media industry was felled. In the age of social media, that the new platform's jump started, the state's ability to control world events by playing reporters like pawns on a chessboard withered away as the influence of the media corporations they worked for dissipated. It's no longer to control information in the same way. That's why they are continually trying to introduce ideas that legitimize censorship and control. Oh, look at all this misinformation and disinformation. That's dangerous. What they recognize is that the state's power is diminishing, the traditional media's power is diminishing, the relationship they have with one another are becoming irrelevant. While this seems like a terrifying time, this is an amazing time. This is a time to take the power back. This is a time where you can demand control over your own life and your own community. You can simply say, we don't need you anymore. The political elite stumbled through this bedlam for two decades, but over that time, new gatekeepers emerged to replace those that had faded away with the decline of the mass media. The state created a new apparatus of control over the public discourse, one whose existence most Americans are still oblivious to. Though it has served the momentary partisan interests of both Republicans and Democrats at various times, to the political establishment at large, this flattened, fragmented digital media landscape has been a prolonged disaster. It thwarted the Obama administration's legislative ambitions by fueling the Tea Party. It gave rise to the ascendance of Donald Trump before defying the new president at every step through its constant agitation of a radicalized liberal resistance. During the pandemic, its rebellion against technocratic arrogance and authority drove vaccine hesitancy and opposition to lockdown measures and mask mandates. The pandemic was a unique time where we saw the assertion of authoritarianism by legitimizing its own measures through safety. At the beginning, I think most of us thought this is a unique situation. There is a need for state control and possibly an advantage to pharmaceutical innovation. As it evolved, different narratives began to emerge, and those narratives were controlled and shut down. We all experienced and saw that happen. Let me know in the chat and the comments what you learned during the pandemic period. All the while, it has hastened the shrinking of both major political parties and the growth of independent voters into a clear plurality. And probably any day now, an outright majority of the American electorate. What is emerging is the genuine possibility for a new political movement informed by independent media, enabling you to communicate what you want and how you want your individual, collective and community life to be run. An emergence of a new federalism and secession in America could be the result of this, maybe should be the result of this, because who wants to spend the rest of their life arguing about gun control, not gun control, abortion, not abortion, progressivism, traditionalism, when it is possibly true that there are different ways of doing it? Do you imagine that there might be tribes in Iceland that live differently from people in Senegal? Or why don't we put them in a room and make them kill each other until they agree where it's better to eat fish or antelope? You know, this ridiculous way to live life. Let people be who they are. Here's a quote from a behemoth of the mainstream media, the New York Times, that indicates where we are in the media landscape right now. A majority of American voters across nearly all demographics and ideologies believe their system of government does not work, said the Times. We all think that now, whether you're on the right, the left, in the middle, a radical, an anarchist, a traditionalist, a progressivist, you recognize that government doesn't work anymore. They know that, and they know you know that. What they're trying to prevent is the natural evolution of those ideas. Hang on, we need different systems of government now, don't we? Why are we living with ideas that are hundreds of years old when we now have the technology to live more democratically? The only way to prevent the natural evolution of the way that power and community works is to bludgeon us with misinformation, to destroy and smear leaders in the space and double down on authoritarianism, censorship, surveillance, control. In this instance, the media and the government have the same interest, the preservation of the old model, to prevent it dying. It's being continually defibrillated because actually it's dying. And you can see that very clearly in the figure of Joe Biden. An old octogenarian dying model is being trotted out for another 4 years, when whoever we are, left or right, we know it's over. In the censorship industrial complex, the political establishment finally found a solution to the problem that plagued it for 20 years. Stripped of their erstwhile ability to control events by concentrating its massive influence on a handful of well-positioned producers, editors, reporters, and media executives, the political elite found new gatekeepers to replace those it had lost. The executives who run the tech platforms can't control the content of the news, but they can restrict our ability to see it. And that's exactly what's happening now. Tucker was an anomaly, an outlier. Whether you think he's racist or you don't like him, or whether you love him and think he's the next Jesus, what you have to accept is he was out of step with the cadence of ordinary mainstream rhetoric. That's why I predict he'll find himself in an independent news space now, perhaps with more power than ever. Simply because our state systems, our systems of government, our systems of media, our systems of finance are dying because of our new technological and communication power. Thanks to the geniuses that came up with these amazing devices and tools, we now can communicate collectively, individually, democratically. There's no reason for the degree of centralized power that we've had for the last century when we have new models and new possibilities. We have to investigate them together. We have to demand them. It is our democratic right. We shouldn't be pinioned between two parties that ultimately work for the same elite financial and corporate organizations anymore. Demand democracy, demand freedom, demand independent media. But that's just what I think. Let me know what you think in the comments below. If you enjoyed this video, have a look at either of these. Turn on the notification bell. We need you. We rely on you. We are in an open dialogue with you. More important than any of that, though, is that you please, if you can, stay free.
You go, Russell Brand. Wow. The truth that he just spit out, and as quickly as he did, unbelievable. I encourage you all to go to his YouTube channel and listen. He has so much to say, and you will learn a lot. I really do believe that. You might not like Russell Brand the way he was in the beginning with his movies and whatnot, but wow, he's another person that came around, and he just talks the truth, and he is becoming more and more powerful. So with that, again, listen to Russell Brand. He has a YouTube channel. He has millions of followers, over 5 million. Amazing stuff. But wow, how he puts it into perspective. You might have to listen to this again as well, because he says so much. Unbelievable. Check him out, Russell Brand. Now, I've never played music on my podcast before. Tom McDonald has come out with a song called Dirty Money. Over 4 million views that he did 7 days ago, last Friday. And amazingly how this ties everything all together. Dirty Money, Tom McDonald, you're going to love it. Just amazing stuff. Have a listen.
They're angry that they'll never shut me up. I'm making more noise. Turn me up or turn me down, it's your choice. Black lives only matter when they got a corpse to exploit. Cause the media made millions off the protests for George Floyd. That's called ad revenue. They make cash selling you all the crap in the ads where they broadcast news. Ooh, the network full of liars got investment capital and segments sponsored by Pfizer. And the freedom fighters, I feel like the left just plants them to infiltrate the right. It's extensive planning. Then it happens overnight. It's impressive branding. Make a million off of shirts that say let's go branding. It's a cash grab, everyone's a lab rat. Amazon made billions of dollars from sanitizer and black masks, and that's that. Funny how the terrorists who attack always come from places that are oil rich and have gas. Democrats, they don't give a damn. What is this about? Our military trapped in the Middle East can't get them out. Heroes are the ones who had the Constitution written down. Y'all aren't using hero while describing Kyle Rittenhouse.
1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cents, 4. We get less and they get more. Buying sold since we were born. They want money.
For this song, it's all classified intelligence. Don't need to go to war to secretly be getting benefits. When Russia launches rockets, we condemn them, but there's evidence a U.S. politician owns the screws they're assembled with.
Ain't no war on drugs, it's economic. You make money off an inmate, every jail cell is profit. Our prisons are privately owned, illegal marijuana just mean kids smoking weed turn to dollars in their pockets, let's be honest. Domestic threats in comparison to nuclear powers who hate the West is embarrassing. Still we label truckers in the convoy as terrorists and confiscate donations, we have no idea where it is. A pipeline leaks, price of gas goes higher. Stock market crash, everybody gets fired. Economy is weak while we trying to beat a virus. $1 trillion in debt to China. We celebrate the smallest battles we're winning, so they can publish the headline that's gonna fuel the vision. But if we champion the crumbs, then it's crumbs that we're given. And we don't make any progress, we're stuck at the beginning.
1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cents, 4. We get less and they get more. Bought and sold since we were born. They want money.
We want
dirty
more.
Dollars fill their pockets while our coffins fill the ground. They make profits solving problems they create to keep us down. Dirty money. Dirty money. I don't want your dirty money.
Money, 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 money.
Not enough soap to scrub, it's soaked in blood.
It's all about the money.
Every time we make a buck, they take from us.
It's all about the money, 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 money.
The dollar runs our lives until we die.
It's all about the money, 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 money.
It controls your mind and it controls mine.
Dirty dollars fill their pockets while our coffins fill the ground. They make profits solving problems they create to keep us down. Dirty
Tom McDonald, Nova Rockefeller, Jared Potter. Amazing video. Check it out on YouTube. Like I said, 4 million views and climbing and number one on Billboard. Absolutely mind-blowing. Russell Brand was talking about this. And growing up, I always knew that, or I was taught that money is the root of all evil. We just have to manage it better. But as you can see, the New World Order are trying their best to divide us, conquer us, single currency, and make us do what they want. It's all happening right before us, too. It's a crazy world. Clown world, as we said before. But again, check out Tom McDonald. He's got so much other music, and it's actually really good. I'm not a big fan of rap. This is actually good music I like to listen to, and I want more people to understand and listen because this is how it should be. He's an independent Canadian artist. Living in Los Angeles now, and most importantly, he has no ties to any record label, any political affiliation. This is just him on the internet, and people are listening. Check him out. Another first here. This is the longest podcast that I've had, and in conclusion of this podcast, I have Tucker Carlson with his two-minute response to his firing from Fox News Network, and it is already received 70 million people have listened to this, and it's growing. I guess when the truth comes out, people want to listen, and it's a good way to end the elusive truth here today. So have a listen, Tucker Carlson, once again.
Good evening, it's Tucker Carlson. One of the first things you realize when you step outside the noise for a few days is how many genuinely nice people there are in this country, kind and decent people, people who really care about what's true, and a bunch of hilarious people also, a lot of those. It's got to be the majority of the population, even now. So that's heartening. The other thing you notice when you take a little time off is how unbelievably stupid most of the debates you see on television are. They're completely irrelevant. They mean nothing. In 5 years, we won't even remember that we had them. Trust me, as someone who's participated. And yet at the same time, and this is the amazing thing, the undeniably big topics, the ones that will define our future, get virtually no discussion at all. War, civil liberties, emerging science, demographic change, corporate power, natural resources. When was the last time you heard a legitimate debate about any of those issues? It's been a long time. Debates like that are not permitted in American media. Both political parties and their donors have reached consensus on what benefits them, and they actively collude to shut down any conversation about it. Suddenly, the United States looks very much like a one-party state. That's a depressing realization, but it's not permanent. our current orthodoxies won't last. They're brain dead. Nobody actually believes them. Hardly anyone's life is improved by them. This moment is too inherently ridiculous to continue, and so it won't. The people in charge know this. That's why they're hysterical and aggressive. They're afraid. They've given up persuasion. They're resorting to force. But it won't work. When honest people say what's true, calmly and without embarrassment, they become powerful. At the same time, the liars who've been trying to silence them shrink, and they become weaker. That's the iron law of the universe. True things prevail. Where can you still find Americans saying true things? There aren't many places left, but there are some, and that's enough. As long as you can hear the words, there is hope. See you soon.
People are starting to wake up, and people are starting to wonder what's really going on, and they want to know what's going on. They can feel the pressure. They can feel the evilness that is upon us and unbelievable days that we live in right now. And just to kind of go with it, I have one more clip from Tucker Carlson. Larry loves this one. He does talk about some crazy stuff. Again, you got to take this with a grain of salt. But there are so many mysteries and so much going on in this world we have no clue about. Just adds to the mystery. Tucker Carlson, once again.
Listen to this crazy-ass story from Tucker Carlson about UFOs.
We got a call from this guy who's a tenured Stanford Medical School professor. He comes on and he's like, 11 years ago, the U.S. government reached out to me because I'm an expert on head injuries, on brain injuries, traumatic brain injuries. And they had all these court cases from families of U.S. servicemen, over 100, who'd been killed by UFOs. The Department of Defense was refusing to give them death benefits or medical benefits. And he's like, so they're in the courts. And I was like, there are over 100 servicemen killed by UFOs? Like, what? He's like, yeah. And there are court cases about it. I'm like, why isn't this on the front page of the New York Times? I don't know. And in a number of cases, these things have landed on military bases, including famously in Germany, in West Germany in the 70s. And servicemen have approached them. And they approach and they get traumatic brain injury.
Wow.
Or they're killed. And he studied their brains.
I've been telling you for a while, we live in clown world, and there's so much craziness going out there. Makes Larry seem like he's just a normal, regular guy that knows everything. All right, the very, very last clip for today's show is from The Angry Mom. We live in a brave new world. This is kind of the funny part, but it's not really funny because it's true. So have a listen.
Seriously, listen close. Blockbuster is closed. Kmart is closed. Sears is closed. Radio Shack is closed. Toys R Us is closed. The largest transportation provider in the U.S. doesn't own a single car. Uber. The largest movie provider in the world doesn't own a single movie theater. Netflix. The largest hotel provider in the world doesn't own a single hotel. Airbnb. The largest retailer in the world doesn't own a single store. Amazon.
Holy smokes, when did this happen? And now it's going to be our money. It's going to be digital. And we're going to go to that social credit score like they have in China. And our rights and freedoms are starting to erode. So people better start waking up and joining together and working together to make this place a free world, which we all can love and cherish each other and get rid of this violence. And wow, we've come so far. It's amazing. With that, I want to thank you for jumping down the rabbit hole with me today. Larry will be with us next week. He has pages of super sensitive information that we need to hear. Because craziness is just beginning. You thought everything up to this point was bad? It's getting worse. Clown world is here. God loves you. We love you. Take care. Keep going for that higher vibration. And keep looking for that elusive truth. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye. Black.